Welcome, everyone. It's a privilege to be invited to talk to all of you today about what some could perceive, I certainly do, a fairly heavy and significant qualitative issue that Ms. Charlene Barrientos-Ortiz and I, who's in the audience today, conducted under the supervision of colleagues Dr. Sheena Bull and Dr. Irene Blair at the University of Colorado and School of Public Health. And today's talk will center around our work on African-American and Latino attitudes and the role of implicit bias, race, and ethnicity that plays into their perceived quality of personal treatment and ultimately their medical decision-making. And for the record, I have nothing to disclose except that I was at the Civic Center last night celebrating with the Giants fans. I was trying to get to bed early. But there was so much noise by my hotel window,
anyway,
I thought I might as well participate in the festivities. I didn't bring my phone, so I had to Photoshop myself into the actual photo. So sometimes when dealing with heavy issues like race and bias and discrimination, helps to add a little levity to the discussion. So hopefully we know that health disparities exist, and that racism and discrimination exist both inside and outside of the healthcare system. And the Institute of Medicine has determined that along with racially biased society and healthcare systems, individual levels of discrimination still exist on the part of providers. And both patient and practitioner bias can actually influence health disparities. And there are many potential negative repercussions for this. Studies have shown that providers that harbor substantial implicit biases against ethnic minority groups are less likely, for example, to communicate effectively with their patients, to prescribe pain medications, and or intensify treatment strategies when engaging ethnic minority patients. These facts help shape the rationale for our current research model. Health disparities, we know, are not fully explained by things like biology or genetics or socioeconomic status or access to care. We know that racial and ethnic bias among healthcare providers could actually worsen health disparities if they're not appropriately addressed. So just to define some terms, explicit bias is racial ethnic bias negativity that is overt or conscious and intentionally used and not as likely to present itself in a healthcare setting, whereas implicit bias is racial ethnic bias, ethnic-based negativity that is unconscious and may be used unintentionally, which is far more common and potentially more damaging to patients. It's almost kind of counterintuitive. You might think that someone who is overtly discriminatory would have more of an impact on one's health, but it's actually just the opposite. So just as there are two major types of bias, there are also different scales for measuring bias. Explicit bias relies on self-report, which we know is not as reliable. However, implicit bias is measured through instruments like the response latency scales and the implicit association test, which was a scale that's been validated and that we used in focusing and concentrating on our qualitative work. So here is a conceptual model, not to make this presentation more complicated, but just sort of shows the influence that clinician implicit bias can have on treatment and control of high blood pressure, which is a health condition that we're particularly interested in Colorado that disproportionately affects African American and Latinos. Path A on the left indicates the potential for clinicians' bias to alter their perceptions and decisions about treatment intensification. And path B on the right indicates the potential for clinicians' bias to affect their patients' perceptions and commitment to prescription drug adherence, which could have a negative outcome on one's hypertension control. So in our study, mixed methods were employed involving both quantitative and qualitative data collection. We looked at two large healthcare delivery systems in Colorado that were examined where primary care providers and patients were surveyed on a large scale. The quantitative assessment actually revealed implicit and ethnic racial bias being common among the providers, which suggests, again, that clinicians and healthcare providers are not intrinsically any different from people in the general community. And it also revealed the greater the provider's implicit bias, the lower they were rated by their patients in patient-centeredness, particularly rated lower among African-American patients and not rated quite as low by Latino patients. And patient-centeredness, according to the Institute of Medicine, is defined as healthcare that encompasses qualities of compassion, empathy, and responsiveness to the needs, values, and expressed preferences on the individual patient. It relies on solid partnerships between patients and practitioners, respectively. And again, our work centered on the qualitative reactions to this quantitative data. So again, here's a visual representation. It's a little bit complicated of how moderate implicit ethnic bias is common among primary care providers. As you can see, there's across the board, there's a greater preference and positivity towards whites over Latinos and African Americans. And this is work that's being in press and being published by Dr. Irene Blair, who's also a part of this qualitative piece. And again, this is also unpublished data, another piece of the quantitative assessment designed to see whether or not primary care providers' bias relate to how they are viewed by their minority patients. So here, as you can see in these tables, there are levels of implicit bias very strongly toward the side of preference for whites in the primary care provider versus Latino group, and slightly less so on the bottom table in the primary care provider versus African American group. In summary, this phase revealed mild to moderate implicit bias again among the providers, as well as the fact that the greater the provider's implicit bias, the lower they were rated in patient-centeredness by African Americans and slightly less by Latino patients. And the next phase of this larger study will be to see whether or not primary care providers' biases relate to their minority patients' hypertension control. So they're going to be measuring whether or not any of this actually has a real effect on how well patients are able to manage their hypertension. So the portion of the qualitative piece of this project that Charlene and I worked on were focus group discussions that included 5 focus groups and a completed qualitative content analysis to document our patients' reactions to these previously shown quantitative data on provider bias. Focus groups participants were asked to both react to this collected data on provider bias and to consider possible explanations for the racial and ethnic differences in association between provider bias and patient ratings on patient-centeredness. Participants were then later asked to discuss their own personal and family experiences, if they had any, that dealt with potential discrimination that they faced in the healthcare setting. We contacted 54 people, invited them to participate. 45 ultimately ended up participating, and the vast majority of them were 50 years or older, which was our intended target group. And participants were asked to offer their thoughts and eventually their suggestions on how to present some of this quantitative data and to whom. So in terms of focus group reaction to the quantitative data, in general, there were no surprises expressed by the participants in both groups in response to reviewing survey data showing that African American patients gave lower ratings than their Latino colleagues. And regardless of their own race and ethnicity, participants believe that patient ethnicity and age negatively influence patient-provider interaction and quality of care. Many themes arose through our qualitative work, and I don't have time in this talk to address them all, but I will try to concentrate on the more prominent themes that emerged. Several participants described perceived discrimination in receiving health care for themselves, their friends, or their family members. One quote that particularly stands out was by a gentleman who said, "Racism is alive and well in the United States, and there are racial and ethnic frictions that still exist." Others in our focus group described the importance and value of established patient-provider relationships and the challenges faced when providers and patients don't know each other well. Another quote by a different participant said he, meaning the patient describing his practitioner, was very rude to me, and urgent care was disappointing. They kept telling me that there was nothing more that they could do for me, and I think this was racial. And as we all know, urgent care is not the most intimate patient-provider setting. However, it's a setting that many underserved populations rely on. When discussing their own personal provider relationship with whom they participants had longer-term relationships with, participants generally had favorable things to say. I have never, ever had any problem with my primary care provider, said one participant. We get along fine. I've been at the X clinic for 40 years, said another focus group participant. And pro-primary care physician sentiments were not universal. However, one participant's statement supports a dissenting minority view when he states, or she states, I have experienced very long waits where my doctor has allowed others in front of me with less severe issues. I think this could have been based on racial bias. So in conclusion, this early work offers insight on minority patient reactions to evidence of provider racial ethnic bias. And we understand that racial and ethnic bias is complex and may be confounded with other types of perceived biases, including those related to age, gender, language, and immigration status. We also learned about perceptions that new Latino immigrants receive in the minds of many other more native Latinos in Denver, receive better quality of care and services, suggesting a sense of injustice and unfairness. These data also suggest that people have been experiencing bias for decades, perhaps their entire lives in many cases. And finally, they offered ideas to us about how to address bias and how to best share data knowing that it exists. And on a not more optimistic note, the vast majority of them, if not all of them, stated that in spite of challenges experienced with bias, most felt hopeful for effective change if it could be implemented both at the institutional and community level. Participants did not believe that all racial or ethnic bias could completely disappear from both the primary care providers and patients' own intrinsic attitudes, but they did have explicit suggestions on how to diminish the negative effects of bias. The most often cited suggestions were that providers and office staff treat patients humanely with respect and consideration, which is not really hard to do, doesn't require a whole lot of funding for that to take place. Participants also suggested that patients become educated and empowered to express concerns and dissatisfaction, and some quotes that exemplify that are, there's a big need for patient education so that they, meaning the patients, know what to address, who and where to respond to with their providers. Another participant said medical institutions need this data, social services agencies, church groups, people that advocate and who need a voice also need this data. Some of our next steps include the dissemination of these study results to audiences of both healthcare professionals as well as community members, sharing our focus group participants' suggestions to appropriate groups to ultimately improve patient-provider encounters, and clearly more research is needed to ensure that providers are not inadvertently promoting more health disparities within their clinical encounters. And we also recognize that it's important we recognize that bias is not unidirectional. Bias takes place on the part of patients as well as on the part of providers, and that therefore both providers and patients need to be empowered to make change, and it needs to come from both groups for effective change to take place, and it needs to come from a place of authenticity and empathy. So in closing, I'd like to thank all of our focus group participants, who we did provide, in addition to food, gift cards for their time. That was helpful, I think. Provider participants, Drs. John Steiner and Edward Haverneck, are very accomplished regional experts in health disparities, cardiovascular disease, and health prevention at the Colorado Institute for Health Research and Denver Health, respectively. And I'd also like to say that I began with this slide at the very beginning. I don't know if you all remember it, with an image that is supposed to depict kind of an ideal representation of what equity in a healthcare setting potentially should look like. So I thought I'd fast forward and close with an image from the present that's slightly more self-serving. I'd like to take this opportunity to show off my one-month-old nephew who's here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and that's my sister-in-law on the right. She's a physician here at UCSF and also a public health practitioner who champions the role of the underserved, the need to help assist the underserved, and that's my brother on the left, who I couldn't convince to pursue a public health career, but he's doing quite well in the IT industry here. So thank you all very much for your time. And I hope that my nephew isn't having to address these kind of issues when he's my age. I'm hoping that work that we're doing at the University of Colorado and that the rest of you all are doing can actually eliminate the need for the next generation to have to continually deal with these issues of health disparity and implicit bias in our communities. So thank you again.